Entrepreneur Weekly interviews the brilliant leaders of today in order to provide a stepping stone of wisdom on the journey to personal business ownership. Now, here's your host, Alan Taylor.
Well, a very fun, I mean fun, first interview, because we have two guys that have the same name that are in business together. And what did they do? They kind of reinvented the Bible. The company is Alabaster, A-L-A-B-A-S-T-E-R, and then CO.com on the web, Alabaster Company. They have done something that could be taboo to some. They've taken the Bible, and they haven't messed with the words at all, but they've changed the way that you read it. They've taken the Bible, and they've put pieces of it on this beautiful artwork, I guess to say. And we have two guys here named Brian Chung. Brian with an I and Brian with a Y. And of course, Brian Chung, one of the two, got married and now he is Brian Yi Chung. So either one of you Brians, I love you guys. First of all, congratulations on this amazing
thing.
And I don't even know how to describe it properly. So first of all, why don't one of the two of you, and you can, I know you're on a Zoom and you can see each other, but one of you tell the story of where this whole thing came out. I mean, it must have been a day when you were sitting there going, gosh, this Bible, there's so much here. I wish we could break it apart a little bit and break it into books, different separate books, and put it on awesome artwork so it's more inspiring. But what was that story? So either one of you take it away.
Yeah, so this is Brian with an I. Thank you so much for having us.
I love it.
A little bit about my background.
Yes.
Some might not know, but I didn't grow up Christian. I grew up in a Buddhist household. And I became a Christian in college. And I remember getting my first Bible as a Christian. I was super excited, but a little intimidated. It was this black, dark purple leather Bible. The first couple pages didn't start with the story of the Bible. It was things to fill out or about the translation. The text was small. It was condensed. Some words were in black. Other words were in red. I didn't know what that meant at the time. And it was just unlike any other book that I had experienced. And on top of that, it was on really thin paper.
Right.
It was just a different reading experience. Sitting next to me was my marketing textbook in college, and it was designed like a magazine. And for the first time in college, I felt super excited to read my college textbook. And I thought to myself, could the Bible be designed differently? I didn't do anything about it at the time. After graduating college, I worked for a Christian nonprofit for about 6 years. And it was during the tail end where I bumped into this other Brian, and we just instantly connected because we had the same name.
Yeah.
And both of us were passionate about art and faith and just wanting to do something about that. And so I told this Brian, like, my experience with the Bible. I was like, what if we, you know, design the Bible like an art book, like a magazine? And his eyes lit up. He got super excited. And so we just decided to go for it. We launched a Kickstarter in 2016. We wanted to make a Bible whose visuals could help deepen people's experience of God. The images in the book aren't necessarily literal. You won't find a picture of a man in robes or ancient temples, but rather images that make you think and wrestle with the text a little bit more, abstract images. You'll see beautiful imagery and thoughtful design. Like, we're thoughtful about like negative space. It's printed on this high quality, thick, matte finished paper. And I think for us as Christians, we knew that the story of Jesus was beautiful, and we just wanted to create a equally beautiful reading experience for people.
Gosh, I absolutely love this story. I love it for so many reasons, because it basically is that you were inspired to simply give it a new twist. And it's like you didn't have to write any words. You're just, you know, borrowing the text and marketing it differently, which is brilliant, guys. Brilliant. All right, Brian Yi Chung. So have you had any pushback from this decision? Which I agree with you, is a beautiful idea. My eyes lit up when I saw it. But there has to be people that are, you know, this is taboo. What are you doing? Anything?
Yeah, of course. I mean, I think any product, no matter what it is going to have pushback. There's always going to be people who you know, think it's a bad product for whatever reason. And that's been true for us as well. I mean, we've had plenty of, you know, the Christian world is vast and diverse, and there's definitely been people within that world that, think that what we're doing is taboo, or think that, you know, we are disrespecting the text and things like that. And I think for us, it is just acknowledging those things, but also acknowledging that, you know, just like, you know, the market, there's like lots of different places to be in the market. I think that's similar in the Christian world as well. Yeah, so I think what has been true for us is we've just really focused on our audience and our customer, and that's young Christian millennials. And, you know, within that space, within that world, we have not had pushback, and that's been our focus from day one and just continues to be our focus as we continue to build Alabaster.
I love it. Alabaster. You guys can find it at alabasterco.com on the web. We're going to continue with this conversation. Their sales are up 175% this year, and they have launched just now two new books. And I've got three of them already, and I can't wait to get more. We're talking about reinventing the Bible, but not really, just the way it's, I guess, laid out. We'll be right back. It's Entrepreneur Weekly. Looking for something. Well, this is Entrepreneur Weekly and Men at Work. We've got two men, both Brian Chung. One Brian with an I and one Brian with a Y. Brian with a Y is Brian Yi Chung now. He got married. And two buddies that have set out to really change the way we read the Bible and how we see the Bible as we are, you know, going through it. I personally think it's brilliant, and I know that there are, you know, folks out there that are going to offer pushback. But now you guys have deals in Australia, UK, Canada, and parts of Asia. So obviously you're doing something right. Your sales are up 175% this year. And you have, what is it? You have like 13 books now as you're continuing to recreate the Bible.
Right.
Okay. Can you talk about, once you did your Kickstarter campaign, where did you start? I mean, it's like, okay, we got some money. Now what do we do? Let's take it from there, because I mean, each one of these are steps, making the decision, putting the campaign out there, raising a little bit of money. Where do we go? We got the money. What did you do next? Because it looks like you raised over $60,000 on Kickstarter back in late 2016 to launch your vision. So give us from that point going on.
Yeah. So, I mean, one of the main reasons why we launched the Kickstarter was to make sure we had product market fit, to make sure that there was people who are actually interested in buying our product. And so now that was proven, then we started actually like working on the product itself. Before the Kickstarter, we didn't have a printer. We didn't know how to ship out our product. And so it's only after getting funded that we started to figure all that stuff out. It took us about 6 months to finally ship out our product. But once people got it, they loved it. That happened in 2017, but it wasn't until 2018 where we actually thought, could we turn this into an actual business? And so we produced a couple more books. We, you know, filed for an LLC to figure all that stuff out. Yeah, we had no idea what we were doing. But late 2018, we were having a launch party for one of our books. And in that party was our future investor. And so he heard about what we were doing. He reached out to us. And towards the end of that year, he said, I want to invest in your company, but the caveat is you all need to go full time because we're both part time. And so early 2019, we're like, okay, I think we're going to do this. Like, it was scary. It was super risky, but we just took the risk, took the leap. And both Brian and I decided to go full time in 2019. And since then, it's been really, really fun to just put energy into the business full time. And I think that's why we've been able to see the business grow.
So did you basically take the Bible in the stories, you know, from Genesis, Psalms, Proverbs, and are you finished now? Where are you with, you know, where you're at?
There are 66 books in the Bible. We've only done 13 so far.
Okay, gotcha.
So kind of our process or approach is we go book by book. We really like to devote time, you know, studying the text, coming up with visual ideas and design ideas. So the whole process, I would say, takes about 3 to 4 months to actually complete.
Gotcha.
And so we still got a long ways to go. We definitely was able to, just as our team has grown, increase the number of books that we've been able to produce in a given year. So I think, you know, last year in 2019, we had only done 2 books. We did Genesis and Proverbs last year. Gotcha. And this year, I think we've gotten that number up to 6. I think just, again, as our team has grown, we've really been able to increase the number of books that we're able to do, but yeah, we're still got a long ways to go.
Well, I just got my first 3 books. I'm hoping to get the whole collection. But more importantly, as I handed them to my kids who are 20 to 30 years old, and the first thing they did was went, oh, wow, this is cool. What are we talking about? The Bible reinvented. AlabasterCO.com on the web. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Entrepreneur Weekly. Now, here's your host, Alan Taylor.
Our spotlight this show in this for this last couple of segments has been the Bible. I know. And oddly enough, we've got Brian Chung Squared. Of course, Brian with a Y, Brian Yi Chung now got married. There's Brian with an I, Brian with a Y. Guys, first of all, again, congratulations. The fun part for me was getting my first 3 of your books. I got Genesis, Psalms, and Proverbs, okay? And I've got kids as old as you. 32 and 26 are your ages. I have a 32-year-old and a 27-year-old, and I have a 24-year-old and a 21-year-old. But when I got these books, I opened up the box, and I think my daughter was there, and she goes, "What's this, Dad?" And I go, "It's the Bible." She goes, "What do you mean it's the Bible?" I go, "Well, it's books of the Bible." And she opened it up and she's like, "What is this?" And I go, "These are the guys I'm going to interview." I said, they did what you would do, because she's actually a professional photographer. I said, they took beautiful photographs and they put little, you know, verses and pieces and parts of the Bible in its order in there. And I said, so now you read the Bible with kind of a whole different mood, a whole different flavor. And so, and then, you know, of course, you know, her husband comes over, and then one of my other kids was there, and he goes, "Let me see that." And he's also a photographer. And it really got their interest. So congratulations for attracting younger people to the Bible. So that to me is thing number one. Now, I'm talking a lot and we don't have a lot of time, but I want to know what you guys have learned, because you went to college. That's where you met, in, University of Southern California. But all that college that you took didn't really prepare you in many ways to be an entrepreneur, which is, you know, it's a whole different animal. But God bless you. You were at the right place at the right time and you took the chance. But what have you learned along the way? You know, angst and anxiety and fears and pushback. I mean, you're dealing with the Bible. You know, it's like you had to grow some character along the way. Either one of you take it. But, you know, what are the couple of big pillars, corner posts that you've learned along the way, how to not doubt yourself or how to not overreact when things get tough, how to turn to each other and talk it out? Give us a couple of those points. Take like 2 each, if you don't mind.
I think the first thing that I would say that we had to like learn is how to be a good team together. I think, you know, Brian and I had some project stuff that we worked on before prior to starting this business. But it was like trying to figure out what are our strengths in running the business and being able to trust each other. Right. It took, I would say, like a good year or so to really get into the groove of like, okay, this is what Brian is uniquely great at. Here's what I'm uniquely great at, and learning how to work together well. So I think that was like the first like lesson that we had to learn together. A lot of good, hard conversations, but really, really worth it.
I love it. That's good.
I would say the second thing.
Yep.
And this, I would say, like, it does sound a little obvious, but I think we've just had to learn this again and again, is just the value of the customer, loving the customer well, serving the customer, finding what the customer needs are, and just sort of prioritizing the customer in all that we do. And so we made some mistakes during our time running the business. We decided to launch a book of the Bible without asking what our customer wanted, and it didn't do so well. This year, our customer was going through a lot of things, right? Like with all the things that are happening in the world. We prioritized listening to the customer, seeing what the customer needs were. In our product creation, in our content, in our marketing message, those things were really, really important, have been really, really important for us as a company. So those are my two.
All right. And then Brian, what are yours?
Well, and for me, I didn't study business at all in college. I think I took like one business class.
Yeah.
I studied film instead. And so I think, for me, starting Alabaster was, you know, like you said, a lot of just learning. I didn't even know how to read financial statements or anything like that. And I think lesson one would be just that I have been trying to continually learn those things. And I think, yeah, as you said, like as an entrepreneur, I think you are just continually doing new things each and every day. And the fun of it is actually to see all the, you know, there's a bunch of problems that you're always going to have each day, and to have fun solving those problems and have fun learning along the way.
I love it.
And then I would say second, I mean, to me, what kept us going is just having a good story and having a good mission behind what we're doing. I think, you know, millennials care about authenticity, doing good work in the world. And I think that's been really true for the brand that we've been trying to build. You know, we're not just selling products. We're actually trying to tell a good story. We're trying to have a good mission behind what we do. We're trying to produce something beautiful that, you know, regardless if you consider yourself spiritual or not, I think we want it to feel like a product that you would still respect.
Right.
And that's just been really fun for us to pursue.
I love it. I'm going to give it back to you in a nutshell. You, first of all, love your customer, value your customer, and be a team, is what Brian with an I said. Continuously learn every day and have fun with it, because you know what? That's what life is about. Have fun while you're learning. And I really appreciate you guys. The company is Alabaster. AlabasterCO.com on the web. If you've always wanted to read the Bible, but I've always, you know, gotten a few pages in and just, oh, it's too intense, this is a beautiful way to see the Bible. Thank you guys for what you did and what you do. Keep up the good work. We'll be right back. It's Entrepreneur Weekly.
You're listening to Entrepreneur Weekly. Now, here's your host, Alan Taylor.
You know, corporate culture is a big deal. No question about it. Culture in general is a big deal. I heard Denzel Washington talking about culture one day, and it's a big deal. Let's just say that. And so we have somebody today that's going to talk about corporate culture. His name is Bill Higgs. He's an authority on corporate culture. He has a best-selling author of Culture Code Champions, 7 Steps to Scale and Succeed in Your Business. Bill Higgs joining us, and he is, you can find him at culturecodechampions.com on the web. Bill, welcome to the show. Talk to me, can you, just for example, why did you decide to write this book? I mean, and when people hear kind of some of the things you've done, they're going to go, oh, well, he knows what he's talking about. But I'm just curious, before I give some of this out, talk about why corporate culture. Why did you write a book on that?
Entrepreneurship is close to my heart. But one of the things, I was a gung-ho Boy Scout, Eagle Scout. Now I'm a distinguished Eagle Scout. Went to West Point, Army Airborne Ranger. But in all of those activities, we were always taught to give back. So to take care of whoever you were working with, but then to give back. And my whole reason for writing that book is we started a company. We wanted to be 35 people and be the best offshore engineering firm in Houston. We lost control. It went from zero to $1 billion. It went to 6,500 people. It went to 15,000 people after we left.
Oh, my gosh.
And it was due to culture, and that culture changed people's lives. So even though our bottom line was four times our competitors, it was the changing lives that my two partners and I enjoyed the most.
Okay.
And I felt that I could give back to those who took care of us by showing other companies and other organizations how to do what we did that just sucked our people in so tight and created an organization that just steamrolled the competition and ended up going worldwide to where we were recognized around the world as the kings of culture in a number of industries.
I got you. Well, graduating top five academically in the United States Military Academy at West Point and runner-up for the Rhodes Scholarship, you were also, like you said, Airborne Ranger, former commander of a combat engineer company. Something must have happened to you as a young man at West Point, or maybe when you were actually, you know, an Airborne Ranger. I always wonder, what was the tipping point for Bill Higgs? Where did it click and you just started down this path in life to be able to go from an initial $15,000 investment to a $1 billion company in 20 years? That's kind of unheard of. But where did it click for you, Bill?
No one that goes to a military academy will forget their first day. And so they're shaving your hair off, putting you in a uniform. You're reporting to upperclassmen who are yelling and screaming at you. And one of the upperclassmen asked me, are leaders born or are they made? And you're under a lot of intense pressure. So I just immediately thought of all the leaders in high school, and they were either really smart or really good athletes. So I said, sir, they're born. They've had me drop for 20 push-ups, so I'm thinking, well, that must have been the wrong answer. And so when I said made, the next time he asked me, he said, absolutely. If you couldn't make leaders, there would be no reason for West Point. And that just, I think, turned a light bulb off for me. So I was in the cauldron of West Point for 4 years, a total leadership experience for 4 years. Then I think in Ranger School, it really crystallized a lot of that leadership and team building and the fact that you had named yourselves. Like I tell people, name yourselves. We were called Mustangers at Mustang, and we were Rangers in the Army. And people reverently talk about Rangers because they know they're going to get the mission done.
Right.
And the same thing with Mustangers in the oil patch. It was, you knew you were going to get a great job there. And so to me, I didn't understand that leadership. I didn't understand you're creating a culture. The culture is like the flip side of leadership. And if the leadership doesn't try to create a culture that can overcome obstacles, they're not doing a good job as a leader. I think that started to become more evident once we started Mustang and we're trying to create a company from scratch. I realized more how the flip side of leadership was creating that culture that people wanted to join and be part of instead of just having a job that they went to for 8 hours a day.
I love it. See, you've already done something for me because like you, I would have had to have thought about the answer to that. You know, are leaders born or are they made? Now, I think I probably would have answered the same way that you are because, you know, it's like, you know, I mean, some of it is, you know, what you believe. And, you know, we had the guys on that kind of reinvented the Bible here just before us. And I think, you know, so spiritually you would think, well, you know, you're ordained by God, you know, so yes, born with it.
Yeah.
But I get your point entirely is that what would be the point of West Point if they couldn't make leaders? And it's a paradigm shift of thinking. It boils down to you first have to believe in yourself and believe that you can be a leader. I think this is brilliant. Hang tight. Let's take another break here and get into this a little bit more. We're going to find out about the 7 steps to scale and succeed in your business with Bill Higgs. His book, Culture Code Champions. Put a .com behind it and you'll find it online. We'll be right back. It's Entrepreneur Weekly. Hands all sweaty and he could hardly speak. Well, my guest today is Bill Higgs, Culture Code Champions. I love it. 20 years from an initial $15,000 investment and three people to a billion-dollar company with 6,500 people worldwide. The second, third, and fourth generation leaders afterwards took the company to a $2 billion in 2014. And this is just a beautiful story. What does it take to be a leader? So, Bill, let's talk about startup, because many entrepreneurs, you know, they're in that startup phase looking to this show and people like yourselves to help them to achieve greatness the way that you have and the way that you try and help people by your culture code, you might say. And we're going to get into the seven steps to scale and succeed in your business. But can we talk about when you first started out and some of the struggles you had?
Sure, Alan. I think it's very apropos because we were in a major downturn in Houston due to the oil price going from $20 down to $3 a barrel. And right now people are in a major economic downturn. And what we found is that we lost faith in the leadership of the company that we were in because of the way they treated us in that downturn. We took 30% pay cuts. They laid off people who were really good workers over the holidays just so they wouldn't have to pay their vacation time.
Yeah.
And I think what you find in downturns is that some really good people get dissatisfied, even if they still have a job. They're unsettled. And now's the perfect time. During a downturn, silos are destroyed. All the silos in a company come down. That's the first thing that comes down, because everybody's in a soup together.
Right.
And so when we started, the three of us just went out on our own, didn't have a project, said, we're going to go find something to do. We wanted to design offshore oil platforms because that's what we had done. But we bought our furniture at 5 cents on the dollar from three engineering firms that were closing down, whose whole job had been to design offshore oil platforms. So we asked the owner, we said, you know, what's causing you to go under? We're trying to start a company. And the biggest answer was the cost of the real estate, the office space leases that they had signed. So when they were 200 people, it all worked. When they were 35 people, those leases were costing them too much. They couldn't get out of them. Mm. And so right now, you're going to see a lot of people sloughing off office space. So people that are starting up like we were, you get the startup with no office space, so you don't have that around your neck. And you have to be innovative and start up to conserve cash. So what we did is we signed 30-day leases for property or office space, and as we added 1,000 square foot, we'd do another 30-day lease for that so we could always back off. So we never got head over heels on our office space dragging us down. But you have to think about different ways to do things. No bank would loan us any money. So we brought all our people in through some agencies that agreed to not charge us until we were paid by our clients. So essentially they floated us. And sometimes it was $20,000 a month that they would be floating us.
Wow.
But seven years later, those same companies were doing $1 million a month with us, and we were paying them in 30 days. So they knew we were good people,
yep,
and they helped us get through that startup. But you have to have your brain turned on in startup and figure out how to do it. But know that everything's open to change because everything's thrown up in the air. In our case, it was due to the oil price. Right now, it's just due to the whole economy coming down,
right,
people having to work in a different mode. This is your opportunity to figure out how you're going to do it differently coming out.
You know what I like about your story here, Bill, is that you kind of took that whole philosophy, the art of the deal, because the average person does the average deal, which is what everybody does. But the entrepreneur, yeah, is kind of like the old saying, in the valley of the blind, the one-eyed man is king. You did something that was unconventional, right? you said, you know, here's how we'll do it. You dictated the guidelines of what you needed to do to grow. And if the person on the other end of that was willing to accept those terms, then you move forward. If not, you look for somebody that was willing to wheel and deal. And I've done that a lot in my life. It's like you have to be in control of your scenario, I guess you might say. And I think that's brilliant. That's a brilliant way. Most people, they sign up on these long 2-year, 3-year deals, and then they're stuck if all of a sudden the economy takes a poop the way it is right now. I mean, it's like, this is a bad scenario for anybody. I happen to be a landlord, and I have a plaza. I have 28 units. The other day, I could see one of our little haircutting salons was struggling, and I went to her, and I said, are you doing okay? She goes, well, not really. And I said, let me just lower your rent. She goes, who does that? I go, I do. I want you to be here. I want you to survive. We all got to survive together. You know, it's like, all I can tell you is that if you're not watching for opportunities to help your neighbor, you know, we had the guys on again about back to the Bible, you know, love your neighbor like they're yourself. You have to treat these people, this culture you're talking about, the culture code champions. I want to treat people like they're my family. And I could see she was struggling, and she gave me a big hug, and I just said, you know, don't get too excited. It's going to go back up after 90 days, you know. But it makes such a difference, you know.
Yeah, there's two things in there that you're saying. One of our phrases was no fake leadership. We believed that there was no fate, that we had to go up and down with the industry.
Yeah.
So the industry is going down. We refuse to go down. We're going to diversify. We're going to find other things to do. We worked for Uncle Ben's Rides. We worked for the Houston Metro Bus Company.
Right.
We would do whatever it took to keep our people. But then along with your golden rule, our philosophy was to make heroes of each other, our suppliers, and our clients. So it's treat them like you want to be treated. Give them all the tools to be successful, whether it's a supplier or a client or your fellow Mustanger.
Beautiful.
And, I think if you do it that way, you're going to be there for the long term.
All right. We're talking to Bill Higgs, and when he comes back, he's going to give us some really important steps here to scale and succeed in your business. The book again, Culture Code Champions. .com on the web. You can find him, Bill Higgs. We'll be right back. It's Entrepreneur Weekly. Are you paying too much for business insurance? Do you have critical gaps in your coverage? Entrepreneur Insurance can help you find out. In 6 out of 10 policies, business owners are paying too much for property, general liability, or workers' comp insurance. Entrepreneur Insurance can help you identify ways to save and any gaps in coverage. Head to entrepreneur.com/insurance to complete the questionnaire and get a personalized quote. It's an easy way to find out if you're paying too much. Again, that's entrepreneur.com/insurance.
You're listening to Entrepreneur Weekly. Now, here's your host, Alan Taylor.
Also, we should mention Wednesday was Veterans Day, and thank you to Bill Higgs for being Airborne Ranger for serving our country. Thank you, Bill. We do appreciate that.
Thanks, Alan.
And thanks to all of our veterans. Okay, so 7 steps to scale and succeed in your business is from the book Culture Code Champions, author Bill Higgs. All right, let's go. Give me some of the pillars here.
For each step, what I do in the book is I give you examples of how we implemented it so people can read, think about it, and say, oh, but in my organization, this is how I could get to that same point. So all I'm trying to do is get people thinking. So the first thing is to open up the communication top to bottom. The second one is to create the team that everybody wants to join. And there'll be some good obvious steps in there, but it's super cheap to do. One of the things is just have a paper airplane flying contest. But most of these steps, it just takes elbow grease. It doesn't take money, and you can change your culture. The third step is to establish a repeatable process. The key thing there for us was to never start from scratch on anything. We found that when we would do that, we would create, in our case, like ordering a pump or something that was made out of what our purchasing people called unobtainium. Right. You couldn't find it anywhere out there. So then we had to rework that specification. Every company that doesn't use go-bys and won't start with a kickoff meeting is going to create unobtainium, which is just wasted space and time and dollars. The fourth thing that I push a lot is hard copy communication. People can go and do this starting today. Take that monthly newsletter, have it printed out, send it to the house. Unbelievable. Instead of just looking at it online and clicking off after one paragraph, the spouse will read the whole thing. They'll show pictures to the kids. And you start to get the hearts and the minds of the family along with your employee. Now you're creating the bigger family that's going to make that employee want to stay long-term at your company.
Oh, I love that.
One of the biggest things I tell a lot of companies, one of the steps is to sell while the shop is full. Most companies and startups, once they get a little overloaded, they stop selling because they're afraid they're going to screw up. Don't do that. Keep selling. You can't turn sales on and off. And if your people are overloaded, they're going to figure out a better, more efficient way to do things that just helps you differentiate as a company. And then one of the things we had talked about a while back is Operation Horse Thief. How do you get the best people? And so there were 100 other engineering firms in Houston we competed with. So we would have a new hire breakfast and thank people for picking us out of all those 100 companies. And then we'd ask them, who are the 5 best people you've ever worked with in the industry? Those people would go on our Operation Horse Thief list. Those were the horses. And then we'd figure out how to go get them. What that allowed us to do is when we were at 200 people, I had 200 people looking for the next Mustanger. And it just became the team people wanted to join. But get it to where everybody in your company is looking for that next person, you know, that has your DNA. And then finally, the last thing that has to happen once everybody's got the culture and you're building a strong organization is to give back to the community. Find ways to give back. And we would find leaders top to bottom in the company that would head up outside activities. And by watching them lead an outside activity, many times they would then get advanced within the company because we would see them leading an activity. Or they might just do something 2 or 3 times a year. But those are the key steps, and I show you a number of ways to go about working on them. What we found is if you don't assign a champion to something, it'll disappear after 4 or 5 weeks. It becomes a flavor of the week.
Right.
So you have to assign a champion to each one of these. You have to encourage them, let them build a team around them, and then you can change that leadership across time. But you have to keep all 7 of these steps going once you get them started. And it can take 18 months to get them all working.
Well, in a good-sized organization, that's actually a decent time frame, I think. Because if you go, like you, from a $15,000 investment with 3 people to a billion-dollar company, that's unobtainium right there for most companies these days. Bill, congratulations on all your success, by the way.
Thank you. You can't do it with just 3 people.
No.
Everybody's got to believe.
That's right. Yep. I love the one you said about getting the hearts and minds of the family. You're right. You're right about that one. That's a big one right there. All right. The book, Culture Code Champions, 7 Steps to Scale and Succeed in Your Business. You can find it at culturecodechampions.com. A big thanks to Bill Higgs. Thank you, Bill.
Thank you, Alan.
All right. That's it for me. This is Entrepreneur Weekly. We'll see you next week.
This program is copyrighted by Entrepreneur Media Incorporated.